Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Pure Multifamily REIT LP fourth quarter results conference call. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during this call you require immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. This call is being recorded on Thursday, March 9th, 2017. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Andrew Gregg, Director of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Andrew Gregg, Director of Investor Relations for Pure Multifamily REIT LP, and I would like to welcome you to our discussion of our 2016 Q4 financial results. We will keep our opening remarks on this call brief, trusting that you've had a chance to review our consolidated financial statements and related MD&A dated March 8, 2017, for the 3 months and year ended December 31, 2016. If not, the documents are available on our website at www.puremultifamily.com under the Investor Info section or on SEDAR. With me today on the call are CEO Steve Evans, CFO Scott Shillington, and Vice President Samantha Adams. Following our formal remarks, we will conduct a Q&A session, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up your questions. Before we get underway, I would like to make a safe harbor statement. The following discussion will include forward-looking statements that involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to be materially different from future results expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. These statements reflect current expectations of management regarding future events and operating performance, and Pure Multifamily assures no obligation to update or revise them to reflect new events or circumstances except as required by law. For a further description of the forward-looking statements, including the risk factors relating to our company and our business that could actually cause results to differ materially from the results discussed in the forward-looking statements, please refer to our MD&A dated March 8, 2017, which is available on SEDAR at www.sedar.com or our website at www.puremultifamily.com. I would now like to pass the discussion on to our CEO, Steve Evans.
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks to everyone for joining us today. We are once again happy to report that Pure Multifamily has delivered another solid year as we continue to produce operating metric results near the top of the apartment REIT sector. Pure Multifamily's portfolio generated 5.3% same property top line revenue growth 2016 over 2015. Our same property NOI grew by 7% 2016 over 2015. And our total G&A expense for the year was approximately $1.4 million, representing a lean 1.9% against revenues. By way of a quick summary, over the past year, we have dramatically improved the quality of our portfolio through strategic capital recycling by disposing of our older non-core assets and acquiring newer properties with more attractive growth prospects and lower future CapEx requirements. As we closed out 2016, we disposed of two communities in Dallas, the Fairways at Prestonwood and the Livingston Apartments, two solid performing properties with an average age of 22 years of age for $57.1 million U.S. dollars. We then reinvested these proceeds into two new acquisitions in early 2017 with an average age of 7 years for $80 million U.S. dollars. Including our first acquisition into the Austin market. As of today, our average apartment year of construction is 2006 across our portfolio. This is one of the youngest portfolios of any of the apartment REITs in Canada. We believe our focus on newer, higher quality assets that are subject to less CapEx relative to our peers will position us well for above average rent growth in the future. I would now like to pass things on to Scott Shillington, our CFO, for further discussion on the financials.
Thanks, Steve. Before going through the financial highlights for the quarter, I'd like to note that all amounts stated on this call reflect Pure Multifamily's interest as disclosed in the MD&A. We feel Pure Multifamily's interest provides the most useful information to the unitholders when looking at our financial results. Within the MD&A, we have provided a reconciliation to reflect these adjustments. At December 31st, 2016, Pure Multifamily's portfolio consisted of 15 investment properties with an average year of construction being 2006, comprising of 5,229 residential units with an average unit size of 913 square feet and was situated on 278 acres of land. The investment properties were valued at $778.5 million and had a weighted average IFRS capitalization rate of 5.41%. Pure Multifamily's net rental income continued to increase as the 3 months ended December 31st, 2016, totaled $10.3 million compared to $9.1 million in the comparative period, representing an increase of 12.7%. For the year ended December 31st, 2016, Pure Multifamily's net rental income was $41.7 million, which is a 27.5% increase, or $9 million, compared to the year ended December 31st, 2015. The reason for this increase in net rental income was primarily due to the operating of additional properties during the current year, the high grading of our portfolio, and also strong same property revenue growth as our same property revenue increased by 4.4% during Q4 of 2016 and increased by 5.3% during the year ended 2016 compared to the same period in the prior year. As noted within our press release and MD&A, during the fourth quarter of 2016, we recorded a larger than anticipated amount of property taxes, primarily due to the 7 current property tax appeals outstanding. This compared to the prior year, where only 3 appeals remained outstanding at the end of the year. We expect to resolve the outstanding property tax appeals within a time period of anywhere from 1 to 12 months. We will create further savings at the time the tax appeals are realized. However, for financial reporting purposes, we must record these amounts based on the latest information available. Therefore, the current amounts recorded are our worst-case scenario. Because of these additional Q4 property tax expenses, the same property Q4 2016 net rental income only grew by 0.9% compared to the fourth quarter of 2015. However, when normalizing these amounts, by which I mean taking the annual recorded 2016 property tax expense and allocating it on a pro rata basis over the entire year, the same property 2014-2016 net rental income grew by 5.4%, which is more of a true indicator of our results. Additionally, what isn't factored into these amounts are the additional future savings from the outstanding property tax appeals, as once these are realized, they will further increase the net rental income amounts. General and administrative expenses for the 3 months and year ended December 31st, 2016 were 1.9% and 2.8% respectively against total revenues. This compared to 1.6% and 1.7% respectively in the prior year periods. It is expected that G&A expenses will trend up in future periods as a result of the ongoing regular corporate level expenses now being incurred after the internalization of the asset management function on September 1st, 2016. However, it is our intent to manage these costs and remain respectful of unitholders' interests by applying the same disciplined approach that we've applied prior to the internalization of the asset management function. At December 31st, 2016, Pure Multifamily had a debt-to-gross book value ratio of 55.2%, and the mortgages had an average interest rate of 3.74% with an average term remaining until maturity of 9.4 years. This compared to 54.6%, 3.72% average interest rate, and 9.4 years remaining at the end of 2015. For the 3 months ended December 31st, 2016, Pure Multifamily's FFO was 8.2 cents per basic and diluted Class A unit, resulting in an FFO payout ratio of 114.8% compared to 10.7 cents per basic and 10.6 cents per diluted Class A unit and an 89.3% payout ratio respectively. For the year ended December 31st, 2016, Pure Multi's FFO was 40.7 cents per basic and diluted Class A unit, resulted in a payout ratio of 93% compared to 43.9 cents per basic Class A unit and 43.7 cents per diluted Class A unit and an 86.1% payout ratio. For Q4 of 2016, Pure Multifamily's AFFO was 7.7 cents per basic Class A unit and diluted Class A unit, resulting in an AFFO payout ratio of 123.1% compared to 10.1 cents per basic Class A unit and 9.9 cents per diluted Class A unit and a 94.7% payout ratio. For the year ended 2016, the AFFO for Pure Multifamily was 38.4 cents per basic Class A unit and 38.1 cents per diluted Class A unit, resulting in an AFFO payout ratio of 98.5% compared to 41.5 cents per basic Class A unit and 40.9 cents per diluted unit and a 91.9% payout ratio. As just noted, the FFO and AFFO payout ratios increased for the 3 months and year ended December 31st, 2016, compared to the same periods in the prior year. These increases were primarily caused by the temporary timing issues caused by the excess cash on the balance sheet, resulting from the profitable sales of our older investment properties and the equity financing that we completed during July, as well as the outstanding property tax appeals and the ongoing occupancy stabilization of our more recently acquired investment properties. When adjusting for these short-term issues, on a run rate basis, Pure Multifamily's FFO Q4 2016 was 10.8 cents per basic class unit, slightly higher than the Q4 2015 amount of 10.7 cents per basic class unit. Our management estimated NAV at the end of the year remains at 690 US or 920 Canadian when using a 75 cent exchange rate. I'll now turn things over to Samantha, who will comment on the operations for the quarter.
Thanks, Scott. The focus of our operations throughout the year continued to be on rental rate growth, occupancy, and streamlining expenses. As discussed on a previous call, our recent acquisitions of stabilizing Class A properties can have a short-term impact on occupancy and NOI growth, but we believe that our strategy of high-grading our portfolio will ultimately translate into strong growth for our unit holders. We implemented some operational changes to our San Antonio portfolio towards the end of the previous quarter and throughout Q4, and now that we are through the weaker leasing months, we anticipate further growth across all areas of our operations. Our same-store revenue growth for Q4 was 7.8% over Q4 in 2015 in San Antonio. And I'd just like to point out we do not yet have a full year-over-year comparison due to the timing of our acquisitions. In Dallas, the economy continues to be robust and our Dallas portfolio is performing very well. This is further supported by our same-store revenue growth for Dallas, which was 5.9% for the year-over-year and 4.4% for quarter-over-quarter. If we remove Amalfi from the quarter-over-quarter analysis, which is our stabilizing asset in Dallas, our quarter-over-quarter revenues increased 5.7%. Our Houston assets continue to achieve moderate organic revenue and NOI growth while keeping their occupancy levels stable. Our same-store revenue growth was 2.6% year-over-year and essentially flat quarter-over-quarter. Our Phoenix asset, which is located in the Chandler submarket, has also performed very well. The Phoenix economy continues to show strength, and our property has delivered 6.8% revenue growth year-over-year and 5.2% quarter-over-quarter. On a portfolio-wide basis, at December 31, 2016, our properties had a 94.9% lease-to-occupancy rate, and we increased our weighted average rental rate to $1,244 per occupied unit, or $1.36 per square foot, for the fourth quarter of 2016, compared to $1,131 average rental rate per occupied unit, or $1.26 per square foot, for the same quarter of 2015. The organic rental rate growth we've experienced during the quarter represents an increase of 4.6% same property average rent per occupied unit when compared to the fourth quarter of 2015. Our NOI margins remain strong, coming in at 54.6% year-to-date, compared to 55.5% in the prior year, with the fourth quarter of 2016 falling a bit to 51.1% compared to 55% in the prior quarter. The difference is primarily due to the outstanding property tax appeals and occupancy levels that are stabilizing assets, which Scott has previously mentioned. And for instance, on a normalized basis, by allocating the annual property tax expense on a pro rata basis over the entire year, the Q4 2016 NOI margin was 53.1%. And as property taxes are a non-controllable expense item and are typically appealed during a future period, if one removes them from the analysis, the NOI margins increased to 73% year-to-date 2016 compared to 71.2% in the prior year, and increased to 72% Q4 2016 compared to 70.3% Q4 2015. I will now turn things back over to Steve to wrap up.
Thanks, Samantha. So in summary, we continue to execute our strategy to build a high-quality Class A apartment portfolio spread across the strongest growth markets of the U.S. Sun Belt. The properties we've acquired are well-positioned in leading submarkets that are in close proximity to demand drivers and growing commercial centers that offer nightlife, restaurants, shopping, and of course, strong employment growth. We remain focused on our active management style that includes repositioning some assets through value-add initiatives. Five out of our last six acquisitions have been brand new assets in stabilization mode. One challenge of operating assets that
that are still stabilizing is we have a short-term impact on occupancy levels, as we have recently experienced. However, we firmly believe that high-grading our portfolio is the right strategy to enhance long-term shareholder value. To that end, we continue to be among the growth leaders in the Canadian REIT sector, as we delivered same-property NOI growth of 7% year-over-year and same-property top-line revenue of 5.3% year-over-year, quarter-over-quarter, year-over-year. The pipeline of apartment properties available for sale in our target markets appears to be very dynamic, with a large supply of suitable properties for pursuit. Moving forward, we have now completed the internalization of our asset management function, and our next initiative in 2017 will be to internalize property management function, as this will strengthen our platform for future growth. Given our solid industry-leading performance, best-in-breed portfolio, located within the strongest growth markets, and the value inherent in our unit price, we are very excited about the growth potential in the coming quarters for our Pure Multifamily unit holders. So on behalf of the management team at Pure Multifamily REIT, I'd like to thank our employees and directors for their hard work and loyalty, and of course our unit holders for their continued support. And with that, I'd like to open up the lines for any questions that anybody might have.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Should you have a question, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a three-tone prompt acknowledging your request, and your questions will be polled in the order they are received. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. Your first question comes from Brad Sturges, Industrial Alliance. Brad, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Brad.
In terms of rent growth, obviously you're still seeing some pretty good lifts there. Dallas seems to be quite strong, and you're a little bit more stable, I guess, in Houston, in San Antonio. But if you're looking out to 2017, are you still expecting similar rent growth that you've been seeing in 2016?
Yeah, I think kind of in our overall portfolio and our markets, our rent growth we're expecting is kind of between 4 and 5% range for next year.
Kind of similar trends, Dallas being the leader of the pack?
Yeah, actually, we think on our properties, I mean, Dallas will be up there. San Antonio will be up there. We still expect Houston to be positive, maybe kind of in the 2 to 3% range. And Phoenix will kind of be in the upper 4s to 5% range as well. So on a blended portfolio basis, it'll be around between 4 and 5.
Okay, great. And in terms of the internalization of property management, it seems like you're getting a little bit closer on that front. At this stage, would you be able to give any color or guidance on what the potential impact could be from an NOI or AFFO point of view?
No, we're not really in a position to give guidance on that right now. I can say long term it will be an accretive thing for us as we grow our portfolio especially. So it's the natural next step that we've been planning, as you know, and we anticipate that commencing pretty much forthwith.
Yeah. And my last question would be on the TSX listing. I know it's something that's been on your radar. Is there something specific that you'd be waiting for to happen before you make the move, or are you in the process now of listing?
We've done the legwork. In fact, we always conduct ourselves as though we've been on the major board in terms of the timing and things like that we adhere to. So we're ready. We, frankly, had only wanted to postpone it to roll it in as we've grown our portfolio size. So we anticipate it happening this year. Do we have a more refined date yet, Sam?
No, not a refined
later
date.
Part of the
focus
year,
has sort of moved to the internalization of property management, which has become
next in line.
Next in line, yeah.
Okay, so timing-wise, the internalization is first, and maybe the listing after that?
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jenny Ma, Canaccord. Jenny, please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Jenny.
So to explore the point of the internalization of property management, can you walk us through the process and the timing, and is it still contemplating the acquisition of the Tipton Group?
We're not quite in a position to give you all the detail yet. So in the coming quarter, we'll have more details to release. And as soon as we have them, we'll release them. But I don't really have
I can tell you the timing is about to start shortly. In terms of affixing numbers to it, I think we're premature to do that, and we don't want to give that kind of projection.
So I guess looking at it another way, do you think that given the portfolio size now, you're at a point where the internalization is neutral to cash flow out of the gate, or is it similar to the asset management internalization where it's a little heavy from the get-go, but then it starts to smooth out as you grow?
Yeah, we think it'll be neutral. That's a good way of putting it, Jenny.
Yeah, excluding one-time costs, setup costs, Jenny, it's basically neutral at this point.
Okay, so neutral out of the gate for property management.
Excluding the one-time cost.
Excluding the one-time, okay. And that is starting 2018 is a fair estimate?
I think we're going to, as Steve mentioned, it'll probably be phased out, so it'll be rolling some stuff in. I think we'll be fully implemented by early 2018 is the goal.
Okay. I guess if it's neutral, then it won't be as obvious in the numbers anyway. So moving on to the new acquisitions that were closed in January, can you speak to where the occupancy rate of those are at right now?
Both the Austin and the Landsbrook property are about 94-95% leased.
Okay, so we shouldn't expect to see a stabilization period for these acquisitions then, like with some of the other assets?
Yeah, sorry, Jenny, I didn't mean to cut you off there. For Landsbrook, which is the property in the Allen submarket of Dallas, no, I'm not expecting any dramatic changes. In Austin, because it is a new build, much like some of the other properties we bought that have been in sort of stabilization mode, although the occupancy for the Austin property, Creekside, is much stronger than some of the other properties we bought that are new builds, you know, we still want to go through a year of sort of going through the resident base and making sure we have absolutely the best tenant profile. So I'm not expecting sort of some of the challenges we've seen at Pureview, but I would expect some stabilization period.
Okay, that's fair. With regards to the Amalfi property, what accounts for the huge gap between the physical and the leased occupancy? Was there, you know, did you guys provide incentives to get it leased up? And also, what is the timing of these tenants taking up occupancy? Are they in by now, or is it a more extended period?
Yeah, no, they're in by now. There was a flurry of activity in December, which is unusual. In our markets to have a flurry of activity in December, and we had residents moving out, but there was a flurry of activity. So what's happened in that submarket as the big corporate campuses, the Toyotas and the Liberties of the world, are getting closer and closer to completion, we're starting to see the influx of people into the submarket. And that's really what has started to drive, which we knew it would. It's just taken a bit longer than we expected, but it's really driven the occupancy at Amalfi.
And okay. I would add the flip side of that, Jenny, is that Toyota's opening was delayed by like almost a year.
Yes.
Which caused, you know, some of the delayed stabilization of this asset in the first place. Because you've been there, you know, it's a center ice location. But we're seeing that corner turn now, and we're very excited about it.
Okay, so you're sitting at the 98.5 right now as we speak.
I think we're about 96 as of Monday's
96.
Report.
Yeah, 96. Okay.
Yep.
But it'll get there by quarter end.
I don't know if we'll hit 98. I'm thrilled with 96.
Okay, fair enough.
Given where we've come from, I mean, if we can get to 98, I think that would be fantastic. But, you know, if we're in that 96 to 98% range, I'm very pleased.
Okay. So generally speaking, is the lease, is the time period between signing the lease and move-in, is that about 60 to 90 days? Is that a good way to look at it?
You know, no, I would suggest that's far too long. For units that are vacant, we've got residents can move in, you know, within sort of 5 days once all the credit checks have been cleared. So it really depends on the unit and if it's currently occupied and somebody's moving out. I would have said 30 days plus sort of a five-day period to turn the unit is more typical.
Okay. So staying with Amalfi, I'd be curious to know what drove the 25% basis point decline in the cap rate. but it doesn't seem to flow through the fair market value. So can you walk us through what went on there?
Yeah, so when we bought the property, it's really the stabilization part of MLP. So when we bought the property, we bought it on a stabilized pro forma, and again, it didn't stabilize as quickly as we had hoped. So we had a higher cap rate in for that value at that point. This is our first full year, so it's our first appraisal done on the property. And because we're not that stabilization, the appraisal, the cap rate had to drop to match the NOI that's coming in at a lower amount. Because when we buy the property, that's actually the true cap rate and the true fair value at the time. So it's after the first full year of operations is when we get the appraisals done.
Okay, so this is an external appraisal.
Correct. So now we have an external appraisal in the first full year, and because we're not at the stabilized level that we thought we'd be at this point, that's the reason for the drop. There's a slight drop in the cap rate for the value part of it.
Okay. So when you guys reach stabilization, then it's the cap rate that's going to move as opposed to the fair market value?
Might be both.
It'll be a mix of both. What we initially valued on is basically our cap rate based on the value we paid.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's like that was the true indicator at that point in time.
Right.
And now we kind of get in the market. And cap rates are kind of within a narrow range. There's obviously slight differences based on who's bidding and so forth on properties when you buy and sell.
Mm-hmm.
So a 25 basis point is kind of within the range. It's not a significant amount. Property to property can vary by that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then also with Houston, I know it's not a big portion of your portfolio, but it looks like the same property occupancy fell by 3% this quarter. I mean, it's been holding up pretty well for the last couple of years. So was there something that was unique going on there at these properties, or is it just the general market softening now?
It was, I think, and I have to go back and double check, but I'm pretty sure it was predominantly at Deer Park. And what we found was whenever there are, and I know we've had this discussion before on these calls, whenever, and we may see it again in March, whenever there are interest rate increase fears, what we're finding at Deer Park is people scramble to buy homes. So we may see something similar again in March, but otherwise it's fairly stable.
So people are leaving for home ownership then?
Correct. At Deer Park.
At Deer Park. Is it because the surrounding homes are sort of within their snack bracket for these renters?
There's some of that. It's more. It just seems to be more. It's in a fantastic school district, so those with families, of course, might be looking to buy a home anyway. It just seems to be spurred on by interest rate fears.
Okay.
I know it sounds funny. The managers said the same thing. It's a funny phenomenon at that property.
But I think you're intuitively right, Jenny, in the sense that if you compare it to Amalfi, for example, to buy a house in that node is going to be $1 million to $2 million. So the renter's not going to make that jump unless they're willing to commute quite a ways. Whereas Deer Park, we're a very high-end quality asset. The average housing cost is a lot closer, so that probably spurs them on when they see those interest rate movements potentially.
Okay. And then my last question is with regards to same property NOI growth guidance for 2017. So taking into account the higher property taxes, you know, even with some money getting back after your appeal process, and given some of the additional supply coming onto the market, what are you looking for this year compared to the 7% in 2016?
Yeah, I mean, we don't give official guidance. Like I was saying, with the revenue is kind of a range what we think may happen in our current portfolio. We do expect to be below the 7%. I would, if I had to, without giving official guidance, I would say it would be closer between 5 and 6% this year with our current expectations on our current portfolio.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. I'll turn it back.
Great. Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Stéphane Boire, 8 Capital. Stéphane, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Okay, I had just a few questions. One is regarding the occupancy rate. Do you have a general or portfolio occupancy that you target by the end of this year?
Yeah, we're comfortable in the sort of, I mean, a normal occupancy is 95 to 97% occupied across the portfolio. So if we're sitting in that range, we're comfortable.
Are we targeting that for the end of the year?
Good.
And do you see, do you feel that the new supply in the regions where you, you recently bought properties, do you think that the new supply could affect the occupancy adversely?
We're always mindful of new supply because that does impact stabilization. And so you can't say it won't have an impact. We still feel like we can be in that 95 to 97% range by the end of the year, taking into account supply issues coming into the various submarkets.
Okay, thank you. And a quick one with the famous tax expense. I was wondering if you expect or how much money we could expect to be recovered from the tax expense.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have that because it could be a range from a $10,000 savings to $100,000 savings on a property. You just don't know until you get to that stage. What I can say is historically from all the property, we generally appeal two-thirds roughly of our assessments every year. And every time we've gotten to this stage, we've gotten something back. We just can't estimate what it's going to be until we actually get to that point.
Okay. Okay. And last one. Given that you've calculated the NOI or a normalized NOI, would you also have a normalized FFO for the quarter?
Yeah. So if it's just the
run rate,
we have about 10.8 cents. But if you only normalize just that current property tax smoothing over the full year, that has about a 0.73 cents impact. So that would take you from 0.82 cents FFO to 0.89 cents on an FFO per unit basis, if you're only looking at that smoothing out of the property tax.
Okay. Okay, perfect. All right, so that's it from me. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from Dean Wilkinson, CIBC. Dean, please go ahead.
Thanks. Hey, everyone.
Hey, Dean.
Hey. Maybe just for everyone, Scott, clarification on the tax issue. This was a result of an increased view of the value of the underlying properties by the taxing authority, correct?
Yeah, correct. We actually, on the mill rates, they actually stayed flat and some even went negative. So it was actually just an increase in the assessed values.
Okay, so on that increase in the assessed values, you know, a ballpark, maybe from a percentage perspective, what would that be? Because it would look like from the magnitude of the jump that the increase in the deemed value was far in excess of what sort of the rental revenue or NOI growth would be implying, perhaps if they use cap rates, they're using a lower one.
Yeah, I don't have an overall number, but I think it's safe to say what we do in our budgeting process on the years kind of going forward is on the properties that we've owned for a while and have been stabilized, you know, it's anywhere from a 5 to 7% kind of increase each year.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ones that are trickier and the ones where you see the big jump are the new assets we're buying, because they kind of go from the developer at a partially stabilized property or even a non-income producing property, depending on how new it is, to a stabilized or an income producing property level. You can get that big jump, that big increase, and those are the ones we kind of are fighting more with or appealing the process of the property taxes, because that's a hard number to get to, and that is a lot harder to estimate until you actually know what the final result is going to be after the appeal process. So it's hard to say what the jump's going to be each year, because it depends if you buy these newly acquired or newly stabilized properties versus, for example, Lennox this year that we bought versus the Landsberg one that we bought. We know Landsberg won't jump up that much because it's an older, it's a 2002 property versus Lennox, which was just completed in 2015.
Okay, that's clear then. And so the amount coming through in Q4, is that just when they do their normal property assessments? So that is effectively a catch-up amount, they're basically saying, well, for the entire year, you've got to pay this and we're going to hit you with a bill in the fourth quarter.
Correct. So we actually, all that is paid. Any savings we now get from the property tax appeals, we will get a refund check, which is year over year, it always works that same way. Again, and we still have those property tax appeals outstanding, so it's kind of when we get those settled.
And does that just flow through your IFRIC 21 adjustment?
No. It depends which one you're looking at. It flows into property taxes. Everything is booked, so it's worst-case scenario booked. when we actually realize those refunds, assuming we get them all in 2017, it'll be a reduction to 2017 property tax.
2017 property tax. So in terms of sort of a run rate for looking at the margin, it would be more conservative to use, say, sort of kind of like an 18% of the top line as opposed to sort of your historical, given that you're probably going to get something back.
Yeah, and it's city by city as well, right? As we kind of, the San Antonio market has a higher property tax percentage against revenues than our Phoenix one, for example. Those are kind of the two extremes on the end.
Yep.
So as we start to expand into certain markets, and we built our portfolio up in San Antonio a little bit, that's one of the reasons why the property tax expense has gone up overall in a portfolio.
Fair to say that the nut of these assessments comes from those San Antonio assets?
Yeah, the San Antonio ones, and actually all four of them are still currently under appeal right now, so we'll see what the result is when we get those settled. And the other ones were, another one was Amalfi, because again, it was the first full year of operations on that one, so that one came in and brought it up from the prior year, because we only had that for 4 months or 3 months in the prior year.
Right.
Those are kind of the big ones there.
Okay, well, I mean, I guess it's a bit of a Hollywood problem, but still.
Well put.
wish I could have some of those. So as you look at the, so maybe a little more for Sam, so as you look at the margin going forward, which would be expected net of all of these changes, still sort of, you know, a 55%-ish is a good bogey?
Yeah, I would say 55 is a safe number. And as our stabilizing assets come online and sort of operate the way I expect them to, we'll probably be able to move that a little bit, of course, depending on what property taxes do, which are not in my control.
Sure. Makes sense. And last one for Steve. What's your acquisition capacity after closing the last two deals?
We still got some cash on our balance sheet, but not a huge flow.
Not huge.
So we're looking at the markets. We've got a couple of other Class B assets that at some point we may consider doing something with as well.
Okay.
So nothing. Yeah.
Okay, that's good enough. That's it for me. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Dean.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Mario Saric, Scotiabank. Mario, please go ahead.
Thank you and good morning. I just wanted to circle back on the operational side and the occupancy kind of target. I want to confirm the 95 to 97% target. That would be a leased occupancy target as opposed to physical?
Correct.
Okay. And then...
Mario, just to interrupt. On a fully stabilized asset, the difference between leased and physical isn't much. So if I'm in a typical property where we're 97% leased, we're 95% occupied. And typically if we're sort of 98% leased, we're 97% occupied. That's typical.
Right, yeah. I've gone back over time. I think the delta's been about 150 basis points or so between the two.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, so that works. And then, so I guess, taking that into consideration, it looks like from an occupancy standpoint for this year, the plan is to try to hold occupancy flattish for the stabilized assets, and then any increase that you get in occupancy will be coming from the four non-stabilized assets. Is that a fair comment, or do you foresee some occupancy pressure in your stabilized portfolio throughout the year?
Yeah, no, I'm not foreseeing any occupancy pressure in our stabilized portfolio. Houston, of course, given the challenges, although our two submarkets so far have been relatively insulated from some of the challenges in Houston. We'll see how 2017 plays out for Houston. They're quite excited about the thought of some of the expansion of pipelines and sort of the increase in that sector. So they seem to be a little more positive down there right now. But, Houston would be the only one that it's possible we could see some softening. But at this stage, I'm not expecting any.
Got it. Okay. And so with respect to Dallas, for example, you're feeling pretty confident, notwithstanding perhaps a slight uptick in deliveries in Dallas year over year, that existing occupancy levels can be maintained.
Correct.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, Sam, I think you mentioned in Deer Park, the turnover was driven by home ownership. are you able to get any sense in terms of, like, within the Dallas portfolio, the breakdown of the turnover in terms of tenants leaving to go to new supply, home ownership, and so on? And has that changed in the last 3 years? 3 months?
Yeah, so from our slightly older assets, they tend to not go to, those residents tend not to go to new supply because they like this sort of more suburban feel. As you've seen with our assets, a lot of the new supply tends to be more urban in nature, even though it's in the suburban markets. I would say if the properties are all a little bit different, but on average, we're sort of 20 to 30% of the people who leave for home ownership.
Got it. Okay.
And in some of the more expensive submarkets, that would tend to be a little bit on, that would be on the lower end of that scale.
Right. Okay. And in terms of the rent growth, I think Scott mentioned kind of target 4 to 5% for 17, and it'll vary by individual submarket. Would that be a target that's an effective rent growth target? Or if not, can you maybe talk about what you're seeing on the concession side today?
Concessions in our stabilized assets, there are virtually no concessions in the stabilized assets, especially in the Dallas market. Amalfi still has some, which we're sort of working our way through. I think Scott's 4 to 5% range, and Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, is sort of a total rental income.
That's the same property.
Same property,
so
yeah.
A lot of this, other than Amalfi, that's for the full year, so it actually won't even be in the full year analysis we're looking at. So really, there's no unstabilized properties in that number.
Right.
Okay, so pretty much your gross rent growth target is equal to your net effective rent growth target.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Okay. And then maybe just shifting over to San Antonio, and I can't recall if we've discussed this in the prior call or not, but what's driving the difference between the lease up at Pure View and Pure Estate, and you know, how long do you think that'll continue?
They're quite different properties. So Pure View was in lease up when we bought it, and we've had some challenges with the residents there, and a few other challenges as well. I'm quite confident we have a handle on everything now, and My sense is by the end of this year we'll have it in a sort of stabilized situation. Pure Estates, and I think we talked about this on the prior call, there were some corporate move-outs at the end of September, quite a significant number of corporate move-outs, and unfortunately the timing of that was such that it also rolled into the very weak leasing month. San Antonio's leasing really slows down sort of November through January and into February. We've seen some tremendous movement already in Pure Estates, and I was just down there, excuse me, and chatting with the on-site staff and the manager and the leasing team. They're pretty confident they'll be 95% occupied by the end of April.
Okay. So that's for Pure Estates, and then for Pure View, your expectation is for that to be stabilized by year end, so 95% as well?
Correct.
Okay. And then maybe just lastly, on the acquisition side, Steve, I think you mentioned 5 of the past 6 acquisitions have been assets that require stabilizing. When you look at your pipeline today in terms of the opportunity that you see, what kind of blend between stabilized and stabilizing assets do you foresee?
Very good question, Mario. So we're looking to... With a goal of sort of splitting it roughly 50-50, we really believe in the renewal of our portfolio and the way that we've approached it. We could do without the pothole in the road for that we hit in terms of stabilization, if I can use that term. So I think the ideal mix for us at our current size and as we grow and go forward would be kind of a 50-50 mix between new in stabilization and already stabilized, but still relatively new, so sort of less than 15 years old and stabilized is our sweet spot there, and a mix between the best new growth areas that would offer new assets for us to place the other 50% in.
Got it. Okay, and then just like in these assets that you stabilize, the clear benefit is that you get to pretty much shape the tenant profile in the buildings. But outside of shaping the tenant profile, like how much value creation is there in the near term in terms of use stabilizing the asset as opposed to kind of waiting 12 months and kind of having buying the stabilized assets, whether it's from a cap rate perspective or price per square foot, or just trying to understand kind of the value creation aspect associated with those first 18 to 24 months.
Each asset's a little bit different, but in some cases, a merchant developer may, you know, tends to fill the asset as quickly as they can, and you may not want all the tenants, but they also leave a little bit of money on the table in terms of rental rates. So we believe that we can get an offset for that lack of income during the stabilization mode. But another way to look at that is that if you believe in an asset, using Amalfi as an example, again, I referred to it earlier, the totally center ice location, that wouldn't have been available. They were planning to sell it when the market's willing to accept a little bit of lease-up risk, and that's pretty typical in the marketplace. So the bigger decision is, do we think that that's a good asset to own for the next 10 years to in terms of results, bat it out of the park over the long term for our investors? We believe it clearly is. And if you decided to say, well, let's wait until it's operated for an extra year, somebody else will own it, and it may not come back to the market. So it's a bit of a balance.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then just if the future acquisition pipeline is 50-50 split between stabilizing and stabilized, how would you characterize it from a geographic standpoint? Let's say Texas, non-Texas.
Well, I think we still love Texas, and we'll expect to add to our holdings in the different markets. But we are looking outside of Texas in a couple of spots, and I might use the same 50-50. Would be in a perfect world, might be 50-50. Some more in the key Texas markets, and maybe some outside, looking to maybe supplement our holdings in Phoenix and a couple of other markets.
Got it. Okay. Sorry, my last question. I feel like I keep saying that, but honestly, last question here for Scott. In terms of the IFRS. It looks like there were two assets externally appraised during the quarter. Is that correct? And if so, which two assets were externally appraised?
Three of them were. Amalfi was one. Fountainwood was another one. And Brackenridge, I believe off the top of my head, was the third one.
And how would the appraisal values have come in relative to IFRS?
Yeah, so the Amalfi one, we decreased the value by a little over $2 million. And again, that's partly driven by cap rate dropped a little bit, but the stabilization of that is taking longer than expected, so that's why that one fell. Fountainwood went up by just under $2 million. And the Brackenridge one was basically flat from the last time.
Okay, so the policy is pretty much you'll mark to market the IFRS value to the externally appraised value.
Correct, unless it's only on acquisition is where we use purchase price. And then the following year, we always do an appraisal.
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Mira.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Himanshu Gupta, GMP Securities. Himanshu, please go ahead.
Thanks. Most of my questions have been answered. Just a follow-up to your remark earlier on the call with regard to 5-6% same property NOI guidance. Does this assume some refund of property tax recorded in quarter four? Or maybe what is the range of property taxes as a percentage of revenue are you assuming in your guidance? Thank you.
Yeah, no, again, like I said, it's hard to assume what we think we're going to get for property tax values. That's why it's a range, because we don't know what we're going to get back. So I don't really know if I can put an answer to that for you. I just say I think we kind of go in that range, and whether we hit the high end or the low end of that range will be based on how much we get back in those property tax bills.
Okay. And then, specific with regard to property taxes, and I know a lot has already been discussed, so what is the probability of getting that, appeal in your favor? I know you mentioned about 7 appeals in process. So what is the probability based on your past experience?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, I can't remember who asked the question earlier, I mentioned historically, on all of our property taxes, when we've gotten the stage, we've gotten something back. So 100% historically. But whether that could be a $10,000 or it could be $100,000 on each property, we just don't know. But we've always gotten something when we've gotten to this stage.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And just lastly, on G&A, what is the run rate for like full year 2017 for G&A?
As we've mentioned in the previous calls, we're still going through that, and it really depends on our growth of how much we acquire. However, we want to manage it. We'd like to be below sub 5% as a percentage of revenue. Again, it depends on our growth. It depends on the property management rollout as well, because that will add to G&A. What it will do is it'll remove some of our property management fees within NOI, but shift some of those costs down to the G&A line. So it's kind of a wash on that end, if you call it flat right now, as an example. But our own corporate level G&A up here, I think we'll be between 4 and 5%, but we could be lower. It just depends on how much growth we get in this year and through acquisitions.
Okay, sure. Thank you. I'll dial it back.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Iwa Kiwa, Laurentian Securities. Iwa, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Most of my questions were answered. It's really more about funding the acquisitions. So you have probably around like 6 properties which are like 80s, 90s vintage. Do you kind of have a sense of timing of disposition, or you would prefer to finance your new properties with equity as you have now shelf available?
Yeah, we don't really have a sense of timing on dispositions. I think we don't have that many 80s and 90s assets. We've got a few, but less than you stated. But no, we don't have a sense of exact timing on that. I really can't put any goalposts around that for you.
Okay. And with regards to looking at larger portfolios, let's say versus one-off acquisitions, like lately you've been doing mostly one-off, do you kind of also looking at bigger acquisitions as well?
Yes. Yeah, we're seeing some more sizable transaction opportunities in the marketplace for sure.
Okay. And let's say if you found something of a large scale, are you open to even financing with a partner?
Yes. Yeah, we've actually looked at that also.
Okay, and size-wise, what will be like, the largest acquisition you will be comfortable making?
It's kind of like asking me how long is a piece of string. I can't really answer. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I just kind of wanted to have a sense of what are you comfortable with. I think that's my last question. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Matt Kornack, National Bank Financial. Matt, please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just wondering, with the 10-year moving up, if you've seen any sort of move up in cap rates as a result, or if they've sort of held pat and the spread is reduced?
I haven't seen any evidence of it yet, Matt.
Okay.
It's something obviously we watch closely, but so far it's been pretty consistent.
I think it's also a little the cap rate movements always lag the interest rate a little bit, so there is a time delay there. Yeah.
And the demand side, at least from an acquisition standpoint, there's still a fair bit of bids on assets, and you haven't seen any pullback from potential acquirers as a result of where interest rates have gone?
Not at all.
Okay. So you spoke to PureView and Amalfi. Just wondering, in terms of Avenue, has that been the same story from a stabilization standpoint? I know it was more of a downtown asset. Wondering how you've progressed so far on that. I know it's still early days.
Hi, Matt. Yeah, it's still a bit early, but it will follow a similar path to Amalfi. I suspect it won't take quite as long as Amalfi, simply because of the delays in some of the big corporate campuses that should have rolled out sooner than they actually will be rolling out.
Right. No, that makes sense. And just with regards to the profile going forward, if I sort of put everything together, it sounds like Q4 was somewhat of a low point. Maybe Q1 it bleeds into there, but then throughout the balance of the year, that portfolio should actually provide some torque to the upside with occupancy plus rent growth. Is that fair?
That's fair.
We think so, yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Seth.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, should you have a question, please press *1 on your touch-tone phone. Your next question comes from Jenny Ma, Canaccord. Jenny, please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a quick follow-up. So you adjusted the same property NOI to normalize for prop tax in Q4. Did you do that for the other three quarters? I would assume there's a bit of a markdown going back.
Yes, correct. So I adjusted the prior quarters as well as I adjusted 2015 by normalizing as well, so we're comparing apples to apples here.
Okay.
So the same store NOI for the year to date doesn't change because it's all that timing's already smoothed out. So Q4 normalized, as we mentioned, is 5.4%. Q3 normalized is 5.6%. Q2 normalized is 5.8%. And Q1 normalized is 8.1%.
Okay. And can you just remind us what the full year number was for 2015?
For the by quarter or by full year? Sorry, I don't.
By full year.
I don't have that in front of me right now. I'm sorry.
You know, that's okay. I'll dig that up. That's fine.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. Please proceed.
Thank you, operator. So on behalf of Samantha, Scott, Andrew, and myself and the entire team at Pure Multifamily, we'd like to thank you for spending time with us today. And as always, if you have questions for us, you don't have to wait for these calls. Feel free to call us at any time, and we always like to talk about our portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your conference call for today. We thank you for participating and ask that you please disconnect your lines.